Welcome to Cider Chat. In this episode, it's part three of the Building a Cidery series, and we're featuring a conversation with the makers at Courthouse Creek Cider, based in Virginia.
Going up.
Hello, my name is Rhea Wincoller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. Cider Chat is now in its sixth season with over 250 episodes that you could download wherever you find your podcasts.
Bravo!
You could also listen at the Cider Chat YouTube channel.
Yes!
Where I also post videos from my travels out and about in Ciderville and special keynote speakers. Which leads me to recommend to you to subscribe to the Cider Chat YouTube channel, because coming up, I'll be releasing a very special presentation on apple genetics presented by Dr. Cameron Peace out of Washington State University. And believe me, you don't want to be missing that, especially if you have an apple tree in your backyard that you love so much and you'd like to identify. Well, it looks like we now have the ticket to identification at a much more micro level. But if you need more convincing, well, just come along with me in this episode, because there's a lot to discover out there in Ciderville. And first off, we're going to hear a little bit from our sponsors. Next week, from February 3rd through the 5th, is CiderCon. This is the annual trade conference for the American Cider Association. They have six tracks, and that means like sessions focusing on different topics. So one is the main stage presentations, which I always attend. And when I attend in person at CiderCon, it's kind of hard to wake up really early in the morning. So I'm super stoked that it's online. It's hard to wake up really early in the morning because I've been enjoying myself the night before with all my friends at CiderCon, enjoying some cider and food. Oh, anyways, it starts in the morning Pacific time. So me being on the East Coast, that makes it super easy to be there and check out the main stage presentations. There's also a track called Cider Business Foundations, and then there's Marketing in the New Normal. And, you know, that's going to be an important one. Cider production, apple flavor and terroir, and then compliance. And compliance is all around making sure your labeling is correct and all that kind of stuff that commercial makers have to really pay attention to. But for us cider enthusiasts, we get a lot out of this too. Certainly with apple flavors and terroir, cider production, and all the other little pearls of wisdom that come out of CiderCon. It's just going to be a blast. So go online now, register today, whether you're a commercial maker, a startup, or a cider enthusiast like me. Check it out at ciderassociation.org. The third annual New York International Cider Competition takes place February 21st. And if you're a commercial maker looking to get your ciders out in front of retail buyers who are judges at this competition, well, don't delay. The last date they could receive ciders is February 19th. Go to nyicidercompetition.com, where you'll find all the info and registration. Up next, it's the Q&A with Fermentis. And we once again will hear from Kevin answering the following question. What is the recommended pitching temperature for Fermentis yeast? In other words, how warm or cold should my apple juice be before I pitch yeast? Take it away, Kevin.
Hello, my name is Kevin Lane, and I'm the technical sales support manager for the Americas for Fermentis. Again, when we did the study for the easy-to-use or ETU certification, temperature was one of the things that came in, and we previously were recommending a very strict temperature range for rehydration. But we wanted to test that because we wanted to make sure that that actually, in fact, was true. And what we found over a number of studies is that the Fermentis yeast can be applied to very cold temperature or very warm temperature. And of course, those are relative terms. But when I'm talking very cold temperature, I'm talking about we tested down to 8 degrees C. and the very warm temperature, we tested up to 40 degrees C. And we tested a number of points in between there, really trying to cover the whole spectrum between 8 and 40, which is quite a huge spectrum when you look at it. And really what we found is that there is some effect by temperature, and it's really strain dependent. But in the end, even if the viability was different by 2, 3, or 4, or 5%, in the end, it didn't matter. It didn't change the fermentation performance, it didn't change volatile compounds, it didn't change really how the yeast was fermenting. Of course, we have a standard for that difference in viability, and those small differences just related to temperature really didn't, it never fell outside of our range. Really, when you look at somewhere between 2 and 5% difference, it's not anything significant at all. But we wanted to check and to make sure that that wasn't affecting the fermentation either, because I think that's the bigger point, is we don't want anybody to have any difficulties with fermentation. But the short answer to the temperature question really is, you can apply the yeast in a wide variety of temperatures.
Alrighty, let me just clear up. 40 degrees centigrade is 104 degrees Fahrenheit. 8 degrees centigrade is 46 degrees Fahrenheit. If you could pitch yeast at those two different extreme temperatures with no adverse effect, talk about ETU. Easy to use, that is. And I certainly feel vindicated. All these years I taught cider making outdoors in November, and I was just having folks pitch the yeast right there out in the field. And other folks are like, oh my God, you gotta wait till it warms up. And I said, no, it's the magic of Ciderville. Well, maybe it's just a little bit of ETU from Fermentis. You can find out more by going to fermentis.com.
Walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Well, I think that's a perfect lead-in to begin our featured presentation with Courthouse Creek Cider. This is part 3 of the Building a Cidery series. In part 1 and 2, we learned about trademark law and how you could secure yours for your brand. In this episode, we'll be hearing from both Eliza and Eric Coffey. They are the makers and owners of Courthouse Creek Cider. And I'm starting with this particular cidery because this is kind of a unique model that I do see some cideries doing, where they are only barrel fermenting, meaning they have all their cider both fermenting and conditioning in oak barrels. No stainless here. This is a family-run small agricultural business. Eric and Liz have 4 kids between them, 2 each coming in from previous marriages, and they're all teenagers right now. So you got to give these folks a lot of credit just straight out of the gate. Their inspiration for their business model comes from the small wineries of the Paso Robles area of California. It should also be noted that Liza grew up in Idaho and was one of 12 kids in a family who lived off the land. And Eric certainly finds that his experience as a chef definitely comes into play. We begin with hearing from Eric on a key phrase that he leans on.
Know your who and know your why. That really informs, I mean, when you start to do that and know who you are, what you want, why you want it, it starts to kind of almost create your model organically, I guess, the best way to put it.
I mean, that is like the key piece for all new startups is, make your business plan, right? I mean, that's kind of the clinical way of talking about it. I like your more organic way, know your who and know your why. And it's so often overlooked.
Well, I get asked that a lot. I've been in the game long enough now where folks that are interested in opening a cidery, and they immediately jump to what equipment should I get? What style should I make? All these what's. And I almost always say, well, who are you? And what's your why? What do you want?
Right.
Because if they want I want to grow apple trees and I want to have an orchard too. Well, then don't do, massive distribution might not be the way for you.
Right.
So I think that helps you formulate what your business plan is and what your goals are.
So let's step back a little bit now. So the initial estimation of the build out versus your actual time it took to work. Let's start there.
So we started planting in 2014. Mm-hmm. And that was the first about two and a half acres. And then about 6 months later, we planted the additional 2 acres. We've got 10 acres total, so we still have room to grow. And we are actively incorporating not only apples, but pears, peaches, other fruits and vegetables. So we do semi-dwarf, about 40% bigger, mostly like G202, 935 rootstock. Most of them came from Cummins Nursery, a great resource for folks. We got really lucky and got hooked up with Eliza Greenman, who grafted the other half of our orchard for us.
Wow, great.
Which was great. I mean, and it was nice to see, also do a little compare and contrast. We have 24 different varieties right now. We're actively seeking out other like old timey southern apples, some Scion Wood from perhaps Diane Flint down in Boggy Ridge. And also locally, we stumbled across a woman's orchard. She's got some old timey southern apples that we're going to try to graft. But we're on course orchard wise as what our expectation was to what the delivery is. So we figured it would be 4 or 5 years. We got mostly 2 year whips. We figured that would be where we'd start to see appreciable yield. And this harvest, 2020, was it. You know, we got a really good yield. I mean, for us, it was, you know, 3 barrels, but we were,
That's great, though.
Exciting. In that amount of time. Are these trellised? Is your orchard trellised?
It is not.
Okay. It's not a high-density orchard in that way.
No.
Okay.
So it's individually staked. I mean, the trees are, they'll get to about 12, I'm just looking out to the orchard. They're about 12 to 14 feet-ish, depending on the variety. But they are individual staked. And then we did irrigate at first.
Half the orchard.
Realized, didn't mean to do that. So we're dry farming everything.
Yeah, we get enough rain. Coming from California, we thought, oh my gosh, we have to do irrigation because it's so dry there. And then we realized you need about an inch a week. We get that.
So that's your orchard, and you're the full package. So you're the orchard, and then you have like the production area, the cidery. Let's talk about that. Where you started off, like where you were estimating that you needed for the cidery, and where you are today. Right. And we're looking at like over is it like a 6 year period? Would you say or five?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
6 year period.
That's
yeah.
Since you started.
So the original plan was, and I do love the term. So we truly garagiste.
Yeah.
In the garage.
Yeah. It works.
That was our bonded winery when we started.
Yeah.
And the goal was...
How big was your garage? Or how big is your garage, I should say?
It's just a two-car
garage.
We'd have people come to our house and sit in the kitchen. And we would do tastings and little tapas and small bites.
Yep.
And then people would want to buy cider. And we'd go, okay, well, come out to the garage.
A couple of really nice cider maker dinners in the house, moving out all the furniture.
Our entire furniture, everything would be moved out, and we'd move tables in, you know, have a chef come down, or Eric would do it, and then we'd move everything back.
I mean, that was the start. We knew there's a resource from Nelson County, I'm sure, Nelson County, Virginia. Folks can find it if they research. They did a feasibility study. We took that with a huge grain of salt. I mean, they paint a very rosy picture. So if anyone does look at that, please, you know, keep in mind that those numbers are really to promote that agriculture, growing, and cideries. Can it be done? Yes, but definitely check your numbers against what they're saying.
Okay.
But we did. It was some great information. Use it as a backdrop.
Yeah.
Knew that sort of sweet spot was about 3,000 cases. For a small winery boutique, which is really where we are positioning ourselves. Mm-hmm. So that first year, in the first couple of years, we were looking at maybe 450 cases, 500 cases, and again, 750 milliliter format.
And we were doing really a farmer's market was the only outlet that we had for sale. And then at our home, people would come and purchase.
The idea was by second, third year, we were really hoping second year, we would build a separate production building and tasting room. But as small business goes, certain things came up and we had to sort of pivot. One of the big ones was that we do have one lone investor, it's a family member, and they just weren't comfortable getting that deep at that early. in the game. And frankly, we were just sort of testing out whether there's a market for what we were doing. Because at that point, we were the only cidery in Virginia that was trying our best to adhere to natural methods. We did have to buy fruit from commercial growers, so there is that caveat.
But our style of cider is so much different.
Very different.
Yeah, than any other style in Virginia. It's unique, delicious.
Yeah.
Very food friendly.
So that was, I mean, that, you know, it's a hiccup. So there you are, and you're looking at your budget going, okay, let's reassess. Yeah.
And now it's one. So now we had to, we took the first third of the building and made that into our tasting room. And then the latter two thirds is still production.
We're just about to break ground to expand that tasting room.
Yeah.
It'll be part of the same building. But if you talk about, over time, what we thought we'd have by 2017, starting real first sales in 2015, 2016, what we thought we might have 2017-ish would be a larger tasting room, more separate building, which we didn't have. And so now we're just breaking ground in 2020 to give us that square footage that we need.
What's the sweet spot for square footage for a tasting room that you're looking for and the cidery?
Yeah, well, that's one of my major novice mistake, which is assessing square footage.
Yeah.
How many seats can you fit? What's your average ticket for that seat? And then what are your expected turnover? One of the big things too is budgetary issues. Yeah. You know, we're kind of, if you really stack us up to most cideries, I'd say in Virginia or elsewhere, we're pretty shoestring.
Mm-hmm.
So while, you know, I would have loved to have done other things in that production room, I think it's really important. That's another thing. If you're starting up, stick to your budget. Do not, you know, stay within your means.
Yeah.
Really, truly, because the worst thing, that's what you don't want. And we're very, very lucky. We have virtually zero debt load. So, I mean, it allows us to do what we're doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And stay with our brand and stay with our vision.
Right.
Not modifying our story because now we've got to chase something.
That's not us.
To pay the bills.
Yeah.
Right.
That's huge.
Yeah. Or to play to the market. Also, right? And that's another piece. If your vision is to have a very, what we say, natural product, as you are doing, your approach, but the market's saying, adjuncts or, doing all different kinds of things, it's hard to do that when your wallet is being tied to that decision making.
Absolutely. And then that volume game.
Yeah.
Am I going to play the volume game and do heavy distribution?
Mm-hmm.
What does that look like profit margin wise? How does that change my operation, my production, all my core? Does it change my core philosophy?
And our cider takes about a year to make. So we can't bust it out and, can it in 2 months. It just doesn't, that's not our method.
Yeah. Cider likes to take a year to make. That's the way I make it. But anyways,
slow and steady.
Yeah, slow and steady. Right.
I think it's important to check yourself though. I mean, and we've done that many times of, are we on the right path? Are we doing this right? And we've a couple times contemplated, hey, maybe we do jump into that volume game.
Yeah.
Maybe we produce cans and all that. But I think the good thing with us is we all usually sit down and go back to the core of who we are and that who and why.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, no, we can't. That's who we are. That is our brand. That is us.
Right. It keeps your rudder really steady on. Perfect.
It does.
I love that. So I have to mention this, because I think it's so damn cute, is the idea of having a barrel in your living room probably...
We thought that would be so cool. Like, we'd have this beautiful barrel, it'd be fermenting.
A 55-gallon barrel, right?
It wasn't, ooh, let's go with it. No, no, no.
Three or 5 gallon. It was a full-on barrel. We were able to get it in. We couldn't get it out. And then once it started fermenting, I mean, the smell in the house.
It was beautiful.
Right.
It
was I dig it. Yeah.
Yeasty apple.
Totally.
And the kids were like, what's that? It's disgusting.
And the overflow of the fermentation onto the hardwood floor, is bubbling over. And
it was, we have the window open.
Uh-huh.
We're siphoning it out. from the barrel in the living room. We have the tractor pulled up against the side of the house with another barrel in the bucket load.
Wow.
And siphoning it into that to
siphon or being pumped? Did just actually like a, created the siphon.
This is very early on.
That is shoestring.
That might be a piece of equipment to add.
Yeah.
A pump. I mean, that's what I do as a, home cider maker, but that is shoestring.
Caveat, that was for us. That was actually before we even, I don't even think we had our commercial permit in hand. I think we were just doing it.
Well, I mean, then that's cool, right? Everybody should have a barrel in their living room at least once. Yeah. Initiation, right? Line of questioning for everybody. That's awesome. So you have scaled up. Here you are. Let's go a little bit more to the nuts and bolts of this. So estimated production, when you started off 6 years ago, you were planning for what? And where are you today?
Yeah. So we were planning the sweet spot again, about 3,000 cases, which if I do my math, I think I actually did it here.
120 barrels.
I think it's about 120 if I do my math. And that's based on a 59-gallon wine barrel.
Okay.
And we do use some spirit barrels as well. So some fluctuation there. So we were thinking about 3,000 cases. First 2 years, we did about 450. Yeah. Ramped that up. 2017, about almost 1,000.
And I have to just add real quickly, the first 2 years we were selling, we've been lucky that every year we sell out.
Yeah.
The first 2 years we were just doing farmers markets and out of our home. 2017 is when we opened up our tasting room. Yeah. So we did have another market, I guess, in the sense of people coming into the tasting room, doing tastings, buying bottles. So we were able to double production that year. And we sold out by the end of the year, which is
good.
Although it is nice to have extra and hold on to it because it tastes so good the longer it's there.
Absolutely.
We have a nice library at this point.
Yeah, we do.
Good.
If we're in terms of barrels, if that might be the easier, the goal was 120. I did some notes here. By 2017, 2018, and 2019, we're about 60, 65 barrels. So about half.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, 2020 and 2020, a little bit of a hiccup with COVID issues.
Mm-hmm.
But also we made another sort of conscious choice or taking a step back and looking at what we're doing is realizing that, maybe we don't need to ramp up as much as we anticipated.
Mm-hmm.
And that had a lot to do with a real change. We were always very tasting room heavy. It was 75% of sales in tasting room, maybe 25 distribution-ish, or that was the goal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at this point, I mean, we're like 85, 90% tasting room and very select distribution at high-end restaurant or bottle shop. The reality is that works for us where we are at our firm, at our farm.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's an important piece. It may not fit or may not work for somebody else where they are geographically, et cetera. We're only 25 minutes from Richmond, 40 minutes from Charlottesville. Mm-hmm. Virginia has a very strong cider community and folks that love the full spectrum, from your six pack cider sort of on the sweet angle to, very dry and the Albemarles, the Castle Hills, us, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, and it's awesome. And I love that. And I love that about Virginia where there's something for everybody. We're about half.
Mm-hmm.
So in a weird, behind expectation, but an adjusted expectation for what is working for us at the farm.
Mm-hmm.
Going into 2021 with the expansion of the tasting room, I think we'll probably keep that case count about the same. So roughly 1,000 to 1,500-ish. We'll probably add a little bit more kegging. And the kegging for us stays in-house. That's not really distro kegging. That's kegging for putting on tap. And frankly, it's a massive cost saving for packaging.
Absolutely.
So some of our core, quote-unquote, flagships, because we don't really have a base cider. Like Rustico changes every year based on the fruit we have coming in and whatnot. But those sort of core flagships that folks are used to or interested in are more so going to be in keg. And that's really to service the tasting room. It's a lot cheaper to do that than package up everything in bottle. You know, we'll pull off from our barrel. Everything's barrel fermented or on fooder. So we'll pull that into a blending tank. And then we'll make that decision of, okay, we're gonna bottle up X. And then the rest is going to go bright tank and into keg.
Well, if you're not worrying about stainless, that's kind of a big money-saving cost there in a way, isn't it? And you're keeping it in these more manageable objects. And do you have a forklift that you're working with too?
Oh, we do.
Does it have a name?
Broken?
Only broken when you need it.
Oh, no, I don't need it.
Oh, Lord. All right.
Tip to folks, that is a piece of machinery that folks should make the investment.
A forklift. You need it,
buy a good one. Or as best as you can for they're expensive. Yeah. They break all the time. Even new ones, I've heard horror stories. Try to get the best you can and find a good service person, reliable, that's going to come out on a dime and help you.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah, that is a good.
Yeah, imagine that, a forklift and a pump.
Yep.
Pump huge.
Yeah.
That's a piece of equipment that I wish, do not skimp on a pump is my advice.
Okay.
Buy a very good one to begin with. You will grow into it. It is not worth buying a subpar or a sort of, I'll get a little small one to get you through.
What do you like? What are you using now?
So we use the US FIP. I want to say it's American Propeller Company or something like that. But if you put in a search for US FIP,
I'll put a link in the show notes for this. Yeah.
Yeah. It's fabulous. I mean, I think they do a good job. Great customer service.
Easy to clean.
Very easy to clean, very easy to break down.
Okay.
It's a fabulous piece of equipment. And, you know, we started off with literally one of the home winemaker, you know, tiny little guys, and I burned that motor out in an instant. So.
Right. So you are a barrel ferment boutique cidery. And one of the questions I had, equipment that you love having from the start on site, and what would that be?
Barrel steamer.
A barrel steamer for cleaning the barrels.
Yeah. It's expensive, but not break the bank. But if you're going to, particularly for those who want to ferment in barrel or non-stainless, actually works fabulous for stainless too. Mm-hmm. But in particular for barrels, it is a lifesaver. Mm-hmm. And it makes cleaning, you know, instead of 90% of your day cleaning barrels, it's, you know, only 85% of your day.
And reliable too, because that's a big thing with the oak, is that they are like living beings almost. Each barrel is very different than dealing with plastic or stainless. It's talking to you the whole time. And if you don't pay attention, it's like having four teenagers. It's going to go rogue.
Absolutely right? Agree. Yeah. And that's, yeah. I mean, for us, that's the risk reward that if you're going to use a lot of barrels, that is the risk reward calculus that you also must do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But absolutely, that the steamer is fabulous. Even just, you know, if you're getting in barrels to steam them and do a cold water rinse a couple times to swell them and sweeten them back up, it's just fabulous.
Cool.
But we've found it amazing. There are a bunch of attachments that came with ours to clean just equipment. We do have one stainless piece, the bright tank, little small guy we call Sputnik. but it works fabulous for that as well.
What is your press? What press are you using?
We use it's just a hydro press. I want to say it's the
a bladder press, you mean? Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
And I want to say it's a 70 liter one, but gosh, I can't remember, a decent size, but we're kind of at the point where we're a little bit outgrowing that. We're either going to have to buy another one or maybe consider going to an accordion press. Although we're not, I mean, we'll see. I don't know. That's a tough one. Right now we kind of manage, it's very labor intensive. Scratter is just a typical cone scratter.
Okay.
And we just kind of slug through it.
Yeah.
But frankly, we're getting more and more foraged fruit every year. And as our orchard comes in, I think we're going to have to make some upgrades there.
For yeah. Sure. Yeah. But initially it worked out for you.
Yes. Right? Yeah. And we're still using it. I mean, we've been using it now for six
seasons.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Got your money's worth. Yeah. No doubt. No doubt.
And the bladder press, there are a few things here and there that we've got a few issues with, but also the parts and pieces are easily replaced, particularly mm-hmm. the bladder when it gets worn out. It's not a hard fix. It's mm-hmm. super easy. And you can find all that material online. I think that's a big thing too, is if you're going to purchase, make sure that you have either a source for replacement parts. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's really important, because you don't want to get into a piece of equipment where it's, out of whatever, they don't make it anymore. Yeah. You can't find the piece that you need.
It's like buying a car. If you don't have a local mechanic, or you're going to have to drive 2 hours to fix your car and it has to go in the shop for a couple of days, that's going to really be a hardship. So that same approach to doing your cidery. So on that same note, equipment that you would have reconsidered had you known then what you know now.
Well, the irrigation for the orchard.
Oh, definitely the irrigation.
I think
that was a big one.
We just didn't, but we're going to repurpose it. Thankfully, yes. Liza is smart and not like me, who just says, forget it, throw it away.
I couldn't part with how much we spent on it. I rolled every single hose up and fitting and zip tie it together and shoved it away. And now we're going to use it because we're expanding and doing a lot of vegetables.
Okay.
So we'll use that for it. But yeah, probably the irrigation was a piece that we could have really saved money on.
And time, because it takes quite a bit to set that up.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm super excited though, because we have all the drip line, and now that it's going into a portion, we're putting in a whole new garden bed and back, and a melon bed, and also some mushrooms and other stuff. So we're gonna drip line all for bottling. We use the Express Fill. They're out of San Luis Obispo, which is actually right down the road from where we came from in Central Coast, California. Yeah. So yay. And they've started off a teeny tiny little company, and it's awesome to see them grow leaps and bounds. Mm-hmm. When I purchased 6 years ago, I made a phone call and it was like the owner, and that was it. And
cool.
They were literally manufacturing to order. And now last CiderCon I went to, they were there with a big setup. Again, it's tough because you look at the budget at the time and you're like, oh man, that seems expensive.
Yeah.
But if you're going to be bottling and you're going to do it, it's worth, do not get a two spout, find something with four it's
spout.
Worth it. It's a huge time.
That means like a four bottles being filled at the same time. Just so folks know what you're talking about.
It's a huge
cost
saving when you start to factor in labor and everything else. So,
because we do everything from pressing apples to bottling, labeling, everything.
Super handcrafted all the way. Yeah. I bet you're a little bit thirsty right now thinking, I'd like to have some Courthouse Creek cider. Well, you can. If you live in Virginia, it's going to be kind of easy to get. But if you're outside of the state and not so close by to their location, check out the link I have in the show notes to Vino Shipper, and you'll be able to order it online. Next week, we'll speak to another maker who doesn't use barrels to the same degree as Courthouse Creek and has incorporated both cultured yeast and stainless steel into the cidery. So we're going to be revving it up, Ciderville, as we go forward. And it sure is fun.
Aww.
As always, I like to give a tip of the glass to all the fine patrons of this here podcast that helps keep the cider news on the World Wide Web via this here podcast. You too can become a patron by joining all the awesome patrons at the Cider Chat Patreon page. Just Google Patreon. That spells Patreon and Cider Chat. And with that, I leave you here. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
We like cider. We like palms. We love orchards and having fun. There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh, yes, there is. There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet. We like cider, we like palms, we like orchards, having some fun.
There is a reason. There is a reason why we do it like this. Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh, yeah.
We like cider.
Oh, yes, we do.
Like palms.
Oh, yes, we do.
We love orchards, having some fun. There is a reason. There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum. Ba-da-da-dum.
We like walking down the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh, yeah.
We like cider.
Ba-da-da-dum.
We like palms.
Oh, yes, we do.
We like orchards, having some fun.
It's just the truth.
Yeehaw!